This is like one of those phone-in shows.
It's getting steamy in here.
For hot adult chat.
Welcome to the midnight
AV chat. Hour. Well, there's a new revenue stream, Phil. Do you want to speak to geeks in your area?
Take your pants off, Mark. Go on. Yeah, you
want. I'm not ready for that.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forums podcast for the 4th of December, 2013. I'm Steve Withers, and joining for this edition are games editor Mark Botwright.
I'm Log Millionaire.
News editor Mark Hodgkinson.
I stopped believing in God when I realised it was just dog spelt backwards.
Movies editor Simon Crust.
Well, you know when something's funny and people get it.
And audio reviewer Ed Selly.
Dads are like arseholes. Everyone's got one, but also they are arseholes.
Right, well, unfortunately, we're going to start off this podcast this week with some really sad news, which is that Paul Walker, who's most well-known for being one of the stars of the Fast and the Furious franchise, tragically died, although ironically, in a car crash on Saturday evening just north of Los Angeles in Valencia, on his way back from a charity event. I've got to say, you know, sometimes you wake up in the morning, you log on, you check the news, and things really do shock you. And I was utterly shocked yesterday morning. I read that. It was genuinely depressing. You know, I'm not saying that Paul Walker was a great actor, but he seemed like a genuinely nice bloke. And as Ed can attest to, I'm a massive fan of the Fast and the Furious movies. And since they're in the middle of shooting the seventh one, my first thoughts were, oh no, has he shot all his footage yet? Ed, what were your thoughts yesterday?
Well, first, the cynic in me, whenever I see it announced somewhere other than a proper news site that someone famous has died, first you actually have to confirm if someone famous has actually died. And then once I'd done that, it was very, very sad. You could say, oh, fittingly ironic, except, of course, he was the passenger, not the driver. I think the saddest thing is, you know, 40 is no real age at all. And obviously he leaves behind, you know, a daughter as well, which I think is extremely sad. And yes, I fully concur with you that we're not talking about losing an absolute acting great here. My wife rather unkindly pointed out that this is realistically the only way he was ever going to get mentioned at the Oscars. Nonetheless, the Fast and Furious movies are tremendously entertaining. And as you pointed out in your piece, Steve, Into the Blue, whilst somewhat overshadowed by Jessica Alba wearing a swimming costume.
Oh, well, that's actually a very good reason to watch that film, just to see Jessica Alba swimming around in that costume, because that is magnificent.
But it's not a bad film. And as you say, it seems to be a genuinely nice bloke. Nothing seems to be coming out of the woodwork. It's just a waste, a very sad waste, I think is the easiest way to sum that up.
Apparently, according to the Hollywood Reporter, he had shot the majority of his scenes for the seventh Fast and Furious movie. They were about to go to Dubai to shoot some more stuff. So they're going to be doing some furious rewriting. It sounds like the July 2014 release date will get moved. But hopefully they can, you know, salvage the film and obviously dedicate it to Paul, I suppose, when it comes out. I guess I'll have to kill off Brian O'Connor basically in the seventh movie now. But it was genuinely, I was really depressed yesterday. I thought that's terrible news. And as you say, he wasn't old. He had a young child. He seemed to be a really nice bloke. He was actually only back from a charity event for a charity that he set up for kids, for disadvantaged kids. As a fan of the films, yeah, he's not a great actor. And to be honest, he's not even that charismatic. He is very good looking, or was very good looking. But I never found him to be a particularly charismatic actor. He never had the charisma of, say, The Rock, for example, who is hugely charismatic. He will always be Brian O'Connor to me, and it was really depressing.
Yeah, well, shocking news. I can't stand the films personally. I don't get on with them at all.
Get out.
I know. I'm sorry to say, be a dissenting voice here, but no, they've never really done anything for me. Although I haven't seen the last one. Shocking news. It's the aging that does me. It's funny, as you get older. When I was 18, you know, people dying in films never really bothered me. As I get older in life, these kind of things really, really shock me to my core. I mean, I'm only 43, and you know, the guy's my age. That's horrific news. It's really, it rocks you to your core, you know.
Can I say that? I didn't have a clue who he was.
Well, you can get out too.
I've never watched a Fast and Furious movie. I've not fancied one. So very sorry. Very sad, tragic news, but I had no idea who the guy was.
Well, nothing great to add other than, yeah, just sad news.
Apparently the Porsche that his friend was driving and crashed in was tested by Jeremy Clarkson, wasn't it? And he said it was terrifying and he didn't even call it the Widowmaker, I think. So,
Porsche built, I think it worked out as 1,500 were built worldwide and well over 150 of them have now been destroyed in accidents. It does seem to have something of a reputation for being a bit tricky.
That's not good odds, is it?
No,
that is not good odds. Okay, well, moving on from Paul Walker's sad demise, we'll move on to hardware news. And I thought maybe Ed would kick off with a bit of audio hardware for a change. You just reviewed the Focal Aria 906 speakers, and I think you were impressed. In fact, joyful, I believe, was the word you used.
Joy is the key word here, Steve. If you read the review, I do hope you read the review. It'd be nice of you to do so.
Well, I proofed it, so I had to read the review.
Well, yes, thank you very much. Effectively, a number of brands, and I'm not going to launch into a tirade here. It's not that time. But there are a number of brands where I've listened to their equipment and I've been extremely impressed with what I've been listening to, but I haven't necessarily been, it hasn't gripped me on an emotional level. It's sort of, I can admire it, but there's no sort of love to it. And I confess that quite a lot of products from the Focal line, French loudspeaker manufacturer, have fitted into this category. So when these ones turned up and, you know, the press releases turned up and I had some information supplied, it's like, these are fun as well. It's like, well, we'll see about that. But they genuinely are. What you've got here is a loudspeaker, which is phenomenally accurate, beautiful soundstage, wonderful tonality, but there's just a sense of life and excitement to the way that they go about making music, which it's a devil of a thing to sort of put your finger on. And I can assure you it's entirely non-alcohol related. It's simply the difference between listening to something and going, yeah, that's all right, and actually stopping analysing it and just realising that you spent 4 hours ploughing through your favourite music. And this is pretty much the first Focal product I've best done that. And for those on a more AV-related bent, I'm now starting to talk to Focal about hopefully getting some more of them together for a proper multi-channel system next year, which I think will obviously be of more interest to some of our members than just a stereo pair. So here's hoping for a good performance there as well.
You might explode with joy, though, Ed, if you have five of them in a room.
Well, we'll see. I'll have to keep it together. But if you told me I would be looking forward to it this much before they turned up, I'd have thought that you'd been drinking. But no, genuinely lovely product. As tested, £900. But if you can forego the shiny gloss finish and go for the walnut, takes it down to about £730-740. And I have to say, at that price, they are seriously good value for money.
Did they get a badge?
They did. I felt that they were highly recommended because right now, if you haven't got a lot of space and you can't be that picky about positioning, I'd still recommend the Guru Junior. But if you've got a bit of luxury in where you can place them, a bit more space for them to breathe, this is one of the very best speakers I've heard under a grand.
I think, Ed, you'd be lucky to find a pair of Guru Juniors at the moment.
Why? What's up?
I thought they were quite hard to come by because they changed production from
I thought that
Eastern European country to another Eastern European country.
I think they've ironed that out now. If you want a pair, it shouldn't be as hard as it was. But I confess that over the late summer it was a bit of a tricky business. Yeah. But I think they're back in production now.
What would they be comparable to, if that's fair and answerable?
Well, obviously, such as the way of inflation, prices for, if you like, various categories of loudspeakers have been creeping up. I think every major brand that you can think of, the Bowers and Wilkins of this world, Monitor Audio, are producing speakers at this price point. Effectively, it is just above Bowers and Wilkins' 6 series, pretty much comparable to Monitor Audio's Silver RX or whatever mm-hmm. they are. And I mean, this is the least expensive speaker in the range. It essentially goes from 700 to about 2,000 for the biggest floor standers, which for an EU built loudspeaker isn't too bad. And there's a lot of technology in there as well. If you read the review, they've been doing some work. They've long been famous for these composite drivers. And effectively, in the flagship models, the Utopias, which start at 7,000, they use a handmade series of composites, which is very nice, but impossible to do at a lower level. So they've actually found a supplier of flax, the actual natural fiber, and they can supply such consistent sheets of the stuff that they can mechanize the process using flax as one of the layers. So you're essentially getting a high-end driver for quite a bit less money. Effectively, you have no shortage of choice at £900 for a pair of stair mounts, but these are very, very good ones.
Well, thank you, Ed. Now, Mark Hodgkinson, we were going to talk about this last week, but unfortunately you couldn't make the podcast. But you just recently reviewed the Roku 3. Now, I've got to say, I'm quite curious about... I've got an Apple TV, which I love, but the Rokus do look very interesting because they do actually have a lot more on them in terms of UK-centric stuff, whereas, let's be honest, the Apple TV is pretty US-centric. Is that correct?
It is. Very much in the style of an Apple TV. It bears a more than a passing similar physical resemblance. It's a palm-sized puck, shiny black, plugs into the HDMI input of your TV. And as you say, it has a large choice of what they call channels, what we probably you'd refer to as apps that you can install. So from things such as the things you'd expect, like Netflix and BBC iPlayer and 4 on demand, that kind of stuff. But then you've got the ability to plug, for instance, an IP camera, web-based camera in, and you can view your web-based camera on there. There's cooking channels. There's playable games. The remote's got sensors inside, so you can play Wii style gaming. There's a little headphone jack on there as well, so if you want to do some late night listening and you can't get and you want to lie back on the couch, I've actually used this because my couch is too far away from my headphone amp for lying down and listening, so I just have the remote by your side, plug it in and off you go, and it's not bad actually, you know, just watching a bit of TV with it. And I think currently there are something like 650 channels for the UK market.
Did you say that you found AV Forum's YouTube channel on there?
What I found, there's something else you can install, which is the Plex Media Server, which is very much like Xbox Media Center. It's just an upgrade from that, basically. And there's an AV Forum's channel on Plex. So I don't know who's responsible for that, but it's kept up to date with the latest videos and podcasts. So that's something else you can do. You can also access services that aren't available through Roku, through Plex. So for instance, you can get US Netflix, YouTube, which isn't a native app, channel keeps going for Roku because they had a fallout a couple of years ago about advertising. But then there was also the solutions for the likes of YouTube. You reviewed Twonky Beam, did you not? Yeah. That basically lets you stream any internet content from your phone or tablet, and you can do that to the Roku. It's getting software updates constantly. The new Netflix experience has just landed on there. 4OD's just landed on there. Promise very shortly is Chromecast-like powers, so Discovery and Launch Protocol will be stuck within the operating software, which again opens it up that little bit more. It's got a cracking mobile app. Probably the best of use with any video device for iOS and Android. And it's a box that just keeps on getting better. Now it could do with more headlining channels. I mean, I noted YouTube's missing. There's no Love Film, ITV Player, for what it's worth.
Blinkbox,
no Demand 5, but they are actively seeking new deals on a daily basis. I mean, we get about one or two channels get added a day. So I think
it's the box that keeps on giving, is it?
The box that keeps the puck of plenty.
How much does it cost?
This particular one is $99.99, but it's in a family of three. So there's one that starts at $59, I think, which is 720p, doesn't have the fancy remote.
Does it got Now TV on it?
Now TV, yeah, it does have Now TV. Well, Roku makes the Now TV box.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. But that is pretty good value, isn't it? £99
for it's a great little device. It's a great little device.
A very strange company, Roku. I mean, years and years ago, when UPnP streaming was kicking off in audio, and most of the ground was being made up by the original Squeezebox, Roku launched something called the Soundbridge, and it was a strange looking device, but it was beautifully thought out and it worked like an absolute charm. And
yeah, that's what I'd say of this box. Yeah.
When it launched, it in many ways was superior to the Squeezebox, and pretty much the only device at the time which could get anywhere near it. The difference is that Squeezebox, Slim Devices as it was at that point, later become Logitech, who sort of dropped the ball, were consistently updating and making it better. Roku sort of launched it, and then it's like they wandered off to do something else.
Yeah, didn't they go with the streaming stick, didn't they, after that?
Yeah,
which was just kind of the forerunner of these boxes.
But it's really good to see that they are. It's nice to hear with this that they're still pushing it and updating it and doing more things to it. They're not just sort of letting it wither. Because yeah, I don't doubt them as a sort of technical technical achievements are already very good. So it sounds like a very interesting product.
Yeah, it is. And if you don't like the closed environment of Apple, which I know some of us don't, then yeah, it's a great alternative to the ATV box.
True. And one of the big failings of Apple TV is the lack of iPlayer and 4OD and the kind of if it had the UK catch-up services on it, it would be like one of the best deals going on, one of the best devices on the marketplace. But really, you are largely limited to Netflix, and that's about, you know, and there's not much else really other than things like iTunes and accessing Apple's own, you know, on-demand services. There isn't much in the way of UK-centric services, unfortunately. So one of the big failings of that device.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a hobbyist device for Apple, isn't it? They don't take it that seriously in the States, to be honest, do they?
They sell an awful lot of them, though.
They do sell a lot of them. Hundreds of millions of them. I think they did a survey, actually, with people who own these devices, and they found more people own the Apple TV, but the people who own the Roku use them far more than the people that own the
TV. Yeah, I can imagine that would be the case, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. But people buy Apple products. Sorry.
People buy Apple products to be flash. Is that what you're going to
say? Yes.
I have no comment on that. I was going to say thanks, Mark. Great. Well, that's it for this week for hardware. We're back in a second with games news. Okay, Mr. Botwright. Everyone probably knows the PS4 launched in the UK on Friday. How did it go?
Yeah, very well. Expected to be the UK's fastest selling console. And it's made great numbers. 250,000 shifted in 48 hours, so beating the PSP, which held the record at 185,000. It was assumed that the Xbox One might have taken that, but that was now still down in third at 150,000. And yeah, it shifted huge numbers. Very tough to get a hold of at the moment, as expected. And in general, it seems like a lot of the early teething problems were as could be expected, as it was with the Xbox One, which is network related. Everyone suddenly hitting the servers and trying to get that day one update.
Didn't they disable some of the PSN functionality to avoid the servers getting hit too hard?
Yes, there were lots of problems with people signing in and actually getting the update and the like. And so to stop a huge amount of instability, they disabled functions like redeeming codes, which made it a bit of a bugger for people who actually had codes for games they wanted to download to actually play on the system and the like. But, you know, I think it was something that was needed just to be able to keep the thing functioning, so they could keep, you know, online multiplayer and the like still going.
Yeah, it seems fairly pragmatic.
Yeah, you got one. Of course, I've got one.
And have you got an Xbox One as well?
That will be arriving in hopefully a few days.
So you weren't going to buy either until for a few.
So obvious this was going to happen.
I'm kind of telling myself that I might end up just shifting one on, whichever one doesn't suit me as well. That's what I'm telling myself.
You tell yourself that.
Yeah.
it is Christmas, Mark. Go on, treat yourself.
Well, to be honest, after a kind of rocky road with the Wii U, that was one that I jumped on straight away, and I've done my best to try and defend it.
Yes, you have.
But, I mean, this is the thing. The PlayStation 4 has eclipsed the Wii U's entire UK install base in the space of 48 hours. Yeah. You know, it's not looking great. And then you also look down at the weekly sales charts and Knack, which was kind of getting fairly mediocre reviews on the PS4, is one slot higher than Super Mario 3D World, which currently I think is sitting second on Metacritic behind Grand Theft Auto 5.
Surely that's a massive travesty, isn't it?
Well, it I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can say, well, the install base, you know, is low for the Wii U anyway, at about 150,000. But by the same token, if those are people who've been crying out for games, you would think that there would be, you know, a decent amount that would go out and pick up one of the highest rated, you know, Mario games since Mario 64.
Yeah, I've got to say that is the only thing that's tempted me so far is seeing the adverts for that game, thinking, well, you know, that was one of the highlights of last gen for me was Super Mario Galaxy. And that's actually tempted me to buy the Wii U at the moment over the other two, strangely enough.
I'm amazed the Wii U sold that many units because I don't know anyone apart from you, Mark Botwright, who owns one.
It's a niche product.
Specialist product. The discerning gamer.
It's got a more selective appeal than the Wii.
It's a flop. Sorry.
Well, you can still play Wii games on it.
Yeah.
So look at it that way.
If you'd want to, really.
No, but it's not great news. On the one hand, you can kind of write it off and say, well, the UK is only one territory. But as soon as you start kind of saying, well, which territories aren't you selling in? And perhaps just saying, well, then that's, you know, OK, you can't win over everyone. Then I think you're on a bit of a slippery slope. If you look at where, you know, Sony was with the PlayStation 3, which was selling evenly throughout all territories. That's how you want it, because then you know how you can turn it around. When all of a sudden you just can't shift units in one country, you know, like Microsoft in Japan, you've got a bit of a problem. You've got to retreat to just, you know, one continent or something to try and build back up. It's, you know, I hate to say it, you know, people have always kind of written off Nintendo, but it's looking more and more like the Wii was the anomaly rather than, you know, the rule.
Yeah, they just haven't got the marketing might, have they, of Microsoft and Sony? They haven't got the money to throw at it like they have.
Well, they've got the Wii money. They're sitting on it.
They don't have the resources of Sony or Microsoft, do they?
But they built a console that was just radically overpriced for what it was released in the run-up.
The Wii marketing was kind of a lot of sort of word of mouth, wasn't it? People going around to people's houses and stuff, rather than their actual advertising campaign as such.
It just took
off.
It's back to perception again, which is people naturally assume that, you know, Nintendo is more for kids and, you know, brightly coloured games are less mature.
Yeah.
Oh, the irony.
So have you got any games for this PS4?
I haven't used it,
or is it just sitting there? I mean,
I have used it, and I've used it with the free games that came with it that I could download. However, I have yet to get to the shops. That's all I will say. Nothing's arrived.
All right. And what is on your radar to get then?
Shall we just move on?
Is it worth the money? Is it worth buying? Is it so much better than the PS3?
No.
No, it's not. That's why I cancelled mine.
And no, of course it isn't. But that's the same as with any console at launch. The people who buy them are the people who are, you know, kind of mad enough, or they just want to jump into that hype zone of being able to say, yeah, I'm one of the first adopters. But it has got some nice features. I will say that things like being able to spectate other people's games and things like that works very well.
Vaguely seedy.
There was some very seedy behaviour, wasn't there, on the Ustream channel? Is that right? So a man showing his drunken wife off.
Yes, she was naked.
She was passed out, and yeah, basically he stripped her naked for the pleasure of gamers.
Yeah, I will say that
people say gamers are sexist pigs, but
immature sexist pigs. Who said that?
It has got vaguely voyeuristic. I will say that, but that's because of the Playroom game and the PlayStation camera allowing you, because it's pointing at you, and then if you're streaming the footage, obviously you're just streaming your own living room. And so there are some extremely odd channels. There was one I saw the other day which was just titled Watch Me Drink Beer.
And did you?
Was that Ed?
Yes,
that
of course
channel,
I did.
Ed? Of course, how can you resist? It's an invitation.
I resent that. I am dry during the weeks these days, Mr. Withers.
Well, I just find the idea of a camera and somewhere called the Playroom, that's just not good. That's got a big
bowl
of wrong.
You like the sound of it. You're going to reorder it now.
Steve's handing over money for that already, and he doesn't want to diversify his portfolio.
Right, well, that's enough of the PS4. Let's give the Xbox One a bit of a kicking, shall we? Apparently, it's, well, as it's been reported quite widely, obviously it's got an HDMI input, but unfortunately, it's the media system is 60 hertz, and obviously in Europe and the UK, we're 50 hertz. So, Mark Hodgkinson, do you want to explain to our listeners where Microsoft have gone wrong?
It's kind of an old problem coming back to haunt European gamers. We had problems in back in NES days with games that were shoddily converted from 60 hertz into 50 hertz. We've got big black borders and 20% slowdown. It's just back in a different guise now. So as you say, Microsoft have designed this system to be the centre of your living room, so you can plug in your set-top box, your Skybox, your Virgin, your Freevee box, whatever, and have the Xbox like an overlay. So, and you can access several smart features, use the Kinect sensor to surf channels. We've got to say this is only in the States is it working properly so far. But the big problem, as you say, is that the Xbox is outputting 60 hertz. So 50 hertz is our broadcast standard. So that's 25 frames per second progressively, or 50 fields interlaced, and it just does not fit into 60. So the results are stuttering motion, particularly noticeable when you're watching.
Called judder, isn't it?
Judder, stuttering motion, because of a mismatch between the refresh and the frame rates. I've seen it in action, very similar actually. I reviewed the Sony Google TV box a while back, last year, maybe. Same deal really, because you plugged your box in. Your set-top box in through an HDMI in and an HDMI out, allowing you to watch your TV and then have like a Google overlay, so you could get to your Chrome browser and do a few Google activities, which it was a good box, but watching TV on it was unbearable. So the experience is just going to be the same on the Xbox One. I believe there is a workaround where you can get it outputting in 50 hertz, but of course that's not the experience that they were intending. Reset your box every time you want to watch TV, and also you don't want to be playing games in 50 hertz ideally, you want it in 60 hertz. And then so they've got to get around this problem when they eventually launch the integration with the British TV services. We're anticipating Sky and Virgin at the very least, and so there'll be a whole GUI experience with lots of program information and all the rest of it, and actors and all the stuff. A really nice smart TV experience, barring the actual picture. Now, getting around this, of course, there are solutions. They can, I'm sure, get the GUI running in 50 hertz and the video running in 50 hertz, but it's the snapping function. So you can bring up a snap to a game or snap to Skype or whatever using Kinect. So there's going to be which is fair enough. We can have that at 60 hertz. It's not so bad when the TV is just in the background and you're not really watching it. It's all right for that to be at 60 hertz. But as Steve, you'll be able to tell you, every TV I've reviewed, when you've switched input signal refreshes, there's a big gap, there's a pause while the TV catches up. Or sometimes there's even that analog snow. Well, it's not analog, of course, but like a similar to the analog TV snow when the channel's detuned. You'll get that. And it's just not going to be that seamless, snappy experience that we were shown at E3 and the unveil. So I don't know what they're going to do, really. I don't think there's a solution where they're ever going to have this seamless experience for Europe.
I was going to say, isn't that a great kind of argument to say that they did see this coming, that it was known? Obviously, it was going to be a known issue, but you can't get, as you said, you can't make that seamless experience where you can just suddenly say, right, I'm going to suspend the game, bang, I'm on the TV straight away, without getting that, you know, split second blank screen. And that just breaks the whole idea of this all-in-one box that can switch between anything seamlessly and quickly and painlessly. You know, if it comes down to the point where picking up a remote and doing it seems quicker and, you know, kind of less ugly on the eye, then, you know, that no one's going to watch TV through that. I think it was a case of almost suck it and see, put it out there, let people see whether they actually noticed it. Let people, you know, I know people who just haven't even noticed it at all, and others who consider it a complete, you know, deal breaker.
Well, I think they might have been talking to Sky, because they're now TV box outputs in 60 hertz, which you can get away with it for movies, a lot of movies. But when you're watching the sport, which at $9.99 a day is not particularly cheap, it looks horrendous. So yeah, maybe they've been speaking to Sky.
People
aren't noticing. Maybe, you know, maybe like you say, maybe people won't complain it en masse, but it's fairly obvious to me.
I think Microsoft definitely knew, they just didn't care. I mean, at the end of the day, Europe's always been the sort of poor cousin to the US and Japan. So
yeah, they've got it working on Blu-ray, 24 hertz, haven't they?
It is hard to overstate just how alien a concept of anything other than 60 hertz is to Americans, in so much as you know, I mean, I've spent years doing technical support. I still do it every now and again. The classic one is back in the heady days of multi-region DVD, Cambridge Audio. We used to sell multi-region DVD players to all and sundry, and they'd be bought by our American customers, and they'd go, well, we stick it in the machine and we play it and we can hear things, but we can't see anything. And televisions, which are absolutely identical to the ones that we can buy in Europe, they have no provision for PAL support at all. It's strictly NTSC only. I mean, obviously, European tellies are invited to run in both. So you do get the feeling that in Microsoft HQ, I dare say, with the resources available to them, it probably wouldn't have been beyond the wit of man for them to get hold of a PAL television. But it just doesn't exist as an exercise. You know,
there is, of course, a simple solution to all of this. Don't bother buying an Xbox, or don't plug in your set-top box into it in the first place.
Well, the argument is that, in fact, this is one of those features that was never intended to be prominent in the UK. In the US, the idea of, you know, this semi-cable box solution that they might be able to get subsidised or something, it seems far more of an attractive deal than it ever would be in the UK.
I don't know, I quite like the idea of it. I like the Google TV experience.
I like the idea of it. I'm just saying that perhaps they won't find a way to monetize it in the same way, and that it's not as key a feature. It's that, you know, that idea of a unifying box isn't quite as great. I mean, perhaps. If it was, wouldn't we have the guide here to start with?
Yeah. Yes. I think I'm sure there'll be partnerships down the line. But, you know, I don't know. I hope those content partners have the self-respect to insist that the TV is outputting 50 hertz when they're showing their content.
Anyway, that's enough Xbox bashing for one day. I'm sure we'll come back to it at some point. I know Mark Botwright saw it, and I definitely watched it. But anybody else watch Charlie Brooker's How Video Games Changed the World on Saturday night?
I watched it last night because I recorded it, but yeah. I watched the whole thing. Yes.
Was it a bit of a trip down memory lane? It was for me. I remember playing Manic Miner so much when I was a kid.
I was more of a Horace Go Skiing kind of guy for Speccy games. I mean, I was very young, much, much younger than you, Steve, when the Spectrum... when the Spectrum was out. I think that they made some sound choices. I think that there were some omissions as well. But, you know, it was a nice, enjoyable potter through video game history. I thought the first choice was initially a bit strange, but when you start to think about it, yes, possibly.
What, Pong? Oh,
final choice.
That was actually a very valid point, which is that Twitter and Facebook are essentially social gaming networks now, to a large extent.
I'll have to watch it on iPlayer.
People play games. The Twitter itself is, in essence, a strange kind of game where you have an avatar and you behave in a different way, and you're trying to get as many followers as possible, which is like trying to score points in a game. It is a game mentality. I mean, Facebook's full of games. So... yeah, it's mobile gaming network and social networking and games based upon that is the future. And I think Brooker was right. I don't think it was meant just as a joke. I think it was a valid point. Mark Botwright, your view?
No, I'd go along with that. I thought it was an inspired first choice, particularly when you consider the idea of what a role-playing game is. You know, the amount of Twitter users that are purely personas, either in a parody form or just as themselves, they're you know, representations of a particular persona, and the whole idea is to try and accumulate followers. They've found a way to almost you know, to add a score system to something that should purely be about socialization.
I mean, I do think they missed off some a number of games that are
which.
I think Sonic the Hedgehog was missing.
Well, except that with that,
not most significant.
Mario got there first. I think the one thing they did miss was a god game of some description, be it SimCity, be it Populous.
They did the Sims, didn't they?
I don't regard that as quite the same scope. You know, that's
did that have ripples out towards wider society? I don't think god games necessarily did, in the same way that, you know, a lot of real time strategy games and things like that. Might have been groundbreaking in the gaming sphere, but did it actually result in anything, any kind of movement in the wider society?
I think, I mean, obviously you could argue that Elite might possibly be counting for this as well, but games where the aim wasn't simply either to reach the end of a level or kill everything that moved, where you were essentially repeating the idea of financial gain or power gain or things like that, that has to have a genesis point as well. And given that you could also kill things in Elite, I don't think it counts as a classic example of it in the way that perhaps SimCity did. Because let's face it, SimCity, unless you can obviously set a disaster off or invoke Godzilla or whatever, but for the most part, it was the benign business of creating your own little world, and it was I always loved it for that.
I was genuinely quite shocked at the level of violence in that Street Fighter example they showed, where the guy literally pulls a woman's legs apart.
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat. Yeah, that was... I mean, I'm not easily shocked, and I'm not. It was pretty realistic, and it was pretty gratuitous and unnecessary. And I'm not one. I'm not a prude, and I'm not. I don't condone.
I'm going to say, I thought the footage of the footage of Night Trap actually still looks pretty shocking.
Yes. Thankfully, there's not much in the way of hardware to play it, so it's a video nasty that's pretty much disappeared from time.
Okay, well, that's how video games possibly change the world. Maybe not. That's it for games for this week. We'll be back with movie news.
What's at the cinema, Steve?
Well, this week I went to go and see Carrie. This is obviously the remake of Brian De Palma's original film from 1976. Now, there's definitely two kinds of remake. There's the remake that does something completely different from the film it's remaking and takes it in a whole different direction, i.e. The Thing, which is a very different film from the original 1950s movie, and actually goes back to the original source material and makes a completely different film that is, in my opinion, a masterpiece, John Carpenter's 1982 remake. And there's the kind of remakes that are just shot-for-shot remakes of the original film. Sadly, Carrie falls into the latter. It adds nothing new whatsoever to the story, to Stephen King's original story. It just is a remake, literally, shot-for-shot, almost, to the point of being a shot-for-shot remake of De Palma's original film. And the fact is that De Palma got it right the first time. It's a great movie. There's no need to remake it. And it's already been remade once as a TV movie. It's had a sequel and a disastrous Broadway musical. So
did it really?
That would have been fabulous.
Oh, yeah, that sounds amazing. Can you get a TV?
It's notorious for being an absolutely massive bomb. I don't know what they were smoking or thinking when they came up with that idea. But anyway, so this has got Chloe Grace Moretz is playing the part of Carrie, which obviously was Sissy Spacek in the original film. She's a great actress, and at least she is actually a teenager, whereas Spacek was about 28 when she made Carrie. But you keep thinking about Spacek, because Spacek just looked a bit strange, gangly, kind of awkward, weird outsider. You know, you totally could buy her as creepy Carrie, whereas... Chloe Grace Moretz is playing that, but you don't really buy into her as being really anything other than what she is, or, you know, an actress playing a role. Julianne Moore plays the sort of the fundamentalist Christian, totally bonkers mother. Again, Julianne Moore, great actress, and she gives it all the hysteria she possibly can, but you're constantly reminded of Piper Laurie, who is just magnificent in the original film, and I think was Oscar nominated for the part. You can't really top Piper Laurie's performance as the mother in that one. But then you go from that down to the supporting cast, and the supporting cast in De Palma's original film is awesome, because you got the Billy Nolan, who was like the bad boy boyfriend of the main villainess. That was John Travolta in the original film. So, you know, you're usually thinking of John Travolta. You got Nancy Allen played Chris, the sort of the bully in the original film. And she was fantastic in it, a real bitch. And ask the girl playing it, Portia Doubleday plays the part in the new film. You know, she's really up against her trying to out-bitch Nancy Allen from the original film. you're constantly reminded of the old film. And also, because it's basically exactly the same, you're sitting there thinking, okay, I know what's going to happen. How are they going to do it differently? And obviously, there's more money for effects and the fact that technology's moved on since 1976. But I kind of like the sort of grungy, you know, done for real effects in De Palma's film and all the CG in this. They give Carrie so many powers. I mean, obviously, she's telekinetic. But, you know, it's almost limitless power. I mean, she can stop a car and turn it upside down. So you kind of think, well, that's just taking it too far. Just because you can do that kind of stuff in effects doesn't mean to say it works within the story.
Could she take on Darth Vader?
No, she does not take on Darth Vader. But she could definitely. She could. No, she could do a neck squeeze.
Well, I wasn't suggesting it made an appearance.
It would have been. It would definitely improve the film if Darth Vader had turned up. And ultimately, you know, my advice is if you haven't seen Carrie, watch De Palma's film because it's really good. Don't bother going to see the remake.
What if you hadn't seen the original?
Well, that's the argument. People go, oh, well, you know, it's being made for a new generation of people that haven't seen the original film. And they were in the cinema with me last night. There were a lot of teenagers because it's a 15 certificate. And they're kind of saying, oh, you know, we've updated it for the modern generation. Yeah, update. Basically, the only thing that's remotely new, as in, you know, sets it in modern times, is the fact that the bully Chris film, when the beginning when she has a period, everyone starts lobbing tampons at her. Exactly the same scene, but someone films it on their phone and then puts it on YouTube. That's the only modern bit in it. And that film, that text, that footage gets used again at the end when she's humiliated with the pig's blood. But it's not updating the film. It's just putting in one thing because, you know, it's obvious to do it now. Everyone's got a phone and people would film it and probably put it on YouTube. But yeah, you could argue that it's for a new generation, but it's the same. Go and watch the video. You watch the original buy the DVD or watch it on Netflix.
No, buy the Blu-ray and watch it on the Blu-ray. Netflix.
Watch it on Blu-ray. If you've got a Blu-ray player, then that's definitely the preferred option. And I think De Palma's film is brilliant. Speaking of Blu-rays, this week we have released The Class 92, which is a documentary about the Manchester United football team, or specifically Beckham, Gary Neville, Paul Scholes, Giggsy. Basically, it follows them from 92, and it's a documentary about their friendship and how they're still friends now, and they played together in the youth team when they first met back in 92. It was heavily publicised on the BBC over the weekend, which is how I know about it, but it actually comes out on Blu-ray and DVD today. We're recording this on the Monday. Anyone seen it or heard about it?
Nope.
The only thing I saw was some story about a ritual that the youth team went through. I'm not sure we can share that here. Did you see that?
No. Involving... You can talk about it afterwards then, Mark.
Yes.
Sure involving biscuit.
Similar idea. It was a poster of Clayton Blackmore, who was a Welsh left back for United, not particularly notable one. And it was, a similar idea to that. And it was something that had to be done in front of the rest of them, in front of that poster. It's very disturbing. Anyway.
Okay, moving on. Also released this week, we've got Disney's Planes, which is bizarrely set in the world of cars, but isn't a Pixar movie.
It's crap.
I have seen this. I saw it on the plane to China, to Shanghai a few weeks ago. Yeah, it's crap.
It's crap, isn't it? It's not a patch on cars.
No. It makes Cars 2 look good, which is saying something.
It's not a Pixar film, did you say?
No.
It's not made by Pixar?
No. Well, I mean, you could say, to these days, what's the difference? I mean, John Lasseter's in charge of both anyway. But technically, it's not a Pixar movie.
Okay.
What else have we got? Alpha Papa's out this week. I saw that in cinemas in the summer. Absolutely.
You liked that, didn't you?
I did like that. Yeah, very funny. Obviously, a Christmas present waiting to happen for plenty of guys in a few weeks' time.
Don't spoil that one.
I haven't bought it for you, Mark, so you can sort of.
Yeah, I've got it. It's coming tomorrow. It's arriving tomorrow.
Yeah, you're going to come in tomorrow.
I bought it for myself. No one buys me decent stuff, just buy me.
Oh, okay. You get all the socks you could possibly want.
I do need some socks. Before.
You've got to go through that ritual, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What else? We've got Man of Steel. That's out this week as well.
Oh, dear.
I saw that at the cinema. Did anyone see it in the cinema?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, it's like half.
It obviously moved you to the core.
Well, it's half a good film and half a pretty ropey film, to be honest. Well, really boring, beating each other up, destroying half a city thing. I think we discussed that at length in one of the podcasts.
Yeah.
The sheer collateral damage involved was staggering. Didn't somebody work out it was billions and billions of dollars of damage that was done by Superman? Thanks a bunch. I've got The Hangover Part 3. It's actually a busy week for releases. Which, obviously, everyone slagged off The Hangover Part 2 for being too much like The Hangover. And then everyone slagged off The Hangover Part 3 for not being enough like The Hangover. So you just can't win sometimes, can you?
Maybe it's Hangover's for you.
Yeah. What else? The Lone Ranger's out this week. Okay, that's now officially the biggest money loser of the year. So that's two for two for Disney, because they got last year's as well with John Carter. Not the biggest money loser of all time, though. There are still some bigger money losers than that. I think Sahara, bizarrely, is the biggest money loser of all time.
Yeah, but isn't that because they sort of reshot it three times? If they'd done it right. If they'd done it normally, it would have been a perfectly average box office response. But it genuinely was filmed sort of three separate times, which meant that it had production costs of about $350 million.
also coming out this week, tying in with the celebrations from the week before, we got the movie Event and Adventure in Time and Space, which is about the original Doctor Who, William Hartnell, and Verity Lambert, and producing the first series of Doctor Who. And also coming out today on 3D Blu-ray is They're the Doctor. Now, Simon, thank God you're on the podcast. At long last, somebody other than me is going to have seen this. What do you think of both Adventure in Time and Space and They're the Doctor?
Okay, Adventure in Time and Space was hugely, hugely enjoyable. Quite true to the facts as well. I don't think they went quite far enough on how grumpy Hartnell was, particularly towards the end, when he wasn't very well and he was become very, very irascible and very, very difficult to work with. They didn't push that too much. But, you know, this is supposed to be a celebration of the show, so I'm not surprised they didn't go that route. But everything from the beginning showing how in control Verity was and how young she was and what she was up against and the fire that was within her to get this show produced, her and the first director, Boris Hussein. Without those two people, this show never would have happened. And I mean, you could arguably say without the Daleks, Terry Nation, without him, without his script, the show would have died on after the fourth episode. So if you point to those two people, that is why this series got off the ground. And it was very, very true. I very, very much enjoyed it. The Adventure
Show. It was really well cast. They all looked.
Casting was excellent. I was just going to say that. Casting was superb. And everyone was fantastic in it. They really, it was very earnest. There was some fabulous cameos all the way through it. And it was really good. Very, very enjoyable.
There was a moment at the end. I don't know about what you feel about this. It's totally incongruous and shouldn't have been there. And yet, for some strange reason, completely worked for me, which is when Matt Smith appears.
Yeah. It's a similar ending to the Day of the Doctor as well, wasn't there? When you think, hang on a minute, that's just a nod, isn't it? That's a nod to what's going on. But yeah, I think it worked. It was an emotional show, and I believe it worked very well. Yeah, I very much enjoyed it.
And Day of the Doctor?
Day of the Doctor. Okay. Let's say what I liked about it. It looked good. Matt was good in it. It was great to see Dave in it, and John Hurt was quite good in it. I loved the little bit at the end with my favourite Doctor. Was he the Doctor? What was he doing there? Don't really know. I really, really enjoyed that. And overall, I'm coming down on the side of, yes, it was a worthy celebration of 50 years worth of the show. However, it was still padding in between two series. It was too quick. There wasn't enough meat on the bones, and it was starting to disappear up its own arse again.
Well, that's just Stephen Moffat, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, yeah. I think on balance, the good outweighed the bad, and I kind of enjoyed it. So
I like the brief Capaldi appearance was quite cool.
The witch?
When Capaldi showed up briefly.
Yes. Do just the eyes.
Yeah, just the eyes.
13. Yeah, 13, not 12, 13, and just his eyes. That was quite clever, and it's leading into the next series. So, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of good elements, but I don't know. When you look back at something like the Three Doctors or the Five Doctors, you know, they were really compelling stories. This one didn't really have that for me. I know, and it's nice that they explained away the Dalek War and that they gave an answer that he wasn't all bad. You know, he didn't destroy everyone. He fixed it in the end. So that, you know, it's nice for the kids, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Simon. It's been 2 weeks waiting for you to turn up, but it was worth the wait. Right. Well, today, if you didn't know, is Cyber Monday, which apparently is everyone, is just about everyone is buying stuff on the internet right now. I think it's something like, in the time it's taken me to say that sentence, it's probably 100,000 quid's worth of orders have been put in. And a new story that you put up this morning, Mark, which had me laughing because I thought, is this a joke? Mm. Is Amazon's using unmanned drones to deliver stuff to customers?
Yeah, it's not a joke. I had to check the calendar first thing. Yeah. I think, what's all this about? If you haven't seen the video, get online and have a look. It's actually quite funny. It's like a Meccano helicopter. These unmanned drones there was a documentary on 60 Minutes last night, or at least they interviewed the CEO of Amazon on 60 Minutes, the CBS show, and he was outlining this R&D they've been doing, these unmanned, these drone delivery aircraft, is all you could describe them as. And I think it's just a publicity stunt, let's be fair. Cyber Monday, they were wanting to publicise themselves, get people online spending money. That's essentially what it was. But they've done well because they've got the internet buzzing, and it's certainly an interesting thing. But the reality of it is it's not going to happen anytime soon. I mean, Amazon say the FAA, the Federal Airline Authority in America, are looking into licensing unmanned planes, but that's going to be some way off. These things have got to be able to avoid, you know, they're going to be expensive to build, surely.
It's got to be cheaper to use a postman, isn't it? Surely.
And there are several. Yeah, of course, it's madness, really. I was really impressed when I first saw it. I wanted to share with the world. The more I think about it, it's absolutely crazy. You have to be within 10 miles of a fulfillment centre. Yeah, has to be within 10 miles of fulfillment centre, which not many of us here will be. I think there's seven in the UK. You are. I was going to say you are, Ed. You've got one in the UK.
I've collected from that. So during the last time, weather was really bad in the run-up to Christmas, I got an email saying, we've noticed your address is comparatively close. We can't deliver it. If you turn up with a printout of your receipt, we'll just hand it to you at the freight bay, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, but there's not many people in the country who will be within 10 miles of one of these things.
The obvious flaw there, Mark, is people shooting them down.
People are going to shoot them down for the cargo. A whole new wave of air piracy we could be hitting. Yeah,
a no-flight zone over Liverpool, for example.
Rival craft from Tesco's and eBay flying out, shoot them down. Yeah, the possibilities are endless. And you can only deliver, I think it's 2.25 kilos worth of stuff. So not terribly practical. So
I look forward to the Parcel Force one that can't fly, has a range of about 40 feet, and moves at
loads
speed.
Loads into flames.
Well, that'll be kamikaze delivery.
The CityLink one, that'll be good.
But it is Cyber Monday, and actually I was looking at, because obviously those drones reminded me of those helicopters you can buy, remote control copters. Mm-hmm. And you can fly around with built-in cameras, and you can use your iPhone as a controller.
Shoot drones down with them.
Yes, well, you can do the one where the iPhone creates. You can fight with your friend, and it's the three-dimensional image on the screen. So it's like having fighting. It's brilliant, actually, good fun. But maybe had me thinking about gifts for Christmas, tech gifts specifically, and that would have been one of mine, as it turns out. So starting with Mr. Botwright, what kind of tech gifts would you recommend for Christmas?
Well, I was going to recommend there was going to be a system out that could play a selection of retro games. Either it's called the Retro N5 or the Retron 5.
Is that a handheld?
No. It's a cartridge system, so you can play NES, SNES, Mega Drive, and the Game Boy cartridges and the like. But it's been delayed for, I think... early 2014. So that was a bit of a kicking the balls. Other than that, always go with the Lego Star Wars Advent Calendar. That's always worth it.
Absolutely.
And they were
Lego pieces in it.
What do you think you're getting them?
I'm just guessing. I don't know.
Well, a little bit of chocolate would be ideal.
Have I guessed right? I'm taking I've guessed right.
Yes, you win the prize.
Woo-hoo. Send me some Lego.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Simon, what about you? What would you recommend? For?
I would recommend a working lightsaber.
Well, in the absence of a real lightsaber.
Don't you have to go find your own crystal
for cutting cheese?
No, that's it can't be anything else, surely. There is no. Oh, I told you, a working Batmobile. There you go.
It has to be tech gifts you can actually buy. Stuff up. Because if we're talking about that, I want that fridge with Han Solo frozen in carbonite on the front. But I thought it was real, and I swear to God, if they made that, I would definitely buy it. It looks brilliant.
Yeah, there you go. There, one of those. I'd have two of those. I haven't got a real one. I have no idea. What about a PS4? Go on.
Apparently, you can buy Han Solo's blaster for 200,000 quid. So it's on auction.
Bargain.
Really? Mr. Selly, what would you go for then? What kind of?
Well, I've had to go through the annual ordeal of trying to buy my dad, a man who already owns everything and wants for nothing, a Christmas present. And if anyone is in the same position as me, I'm quite lucky in so much as a fastidious man of in terms of dental health, my dad has a habit of using a toothpick after a meal and just sort of these little sad plastic jobs. So I'm delighted to say that on Christmas Day, he will be unwrapping a machined titanium toothpick, which I've bought for him, which is probably overkill, but nonetheless a very, very cool thing. I have no doubt it's going to be taken off him the first time he goes on holiday and forgets to take it out of his wallet at the airport metal detector. But nonetheless, I just thought, if anyone is out there thinking, what the bloody hell do I buy my dad? Why not? It's got to be worth a look. And it hasn't turned up yet. I'm afraid it's coming from Hong Kong on eBay, so it'll probably turn up in June. But
is it on a drone?
How much is it? Out of course.
It's cost me a princely £8. Don't worry, I bought him some beer as well, but that's a bit predictable. But I just thought that, I thought he won't know
bought
it exists.
Some beer. For Christmas.
Yes.
There's a nice local, bottle of wine or something.
There's a local award-winning brewery up the road from me, so you buy one of the 25-pint keg things.
Lovely.
Reasonable to me.
Yeah, you see. And furthermore, you can share the wealth with that particular Christmas present as well.
A drunken man using a titanium toothpick.
What could possibly go wrong? I also, is a tradition as well. I bought him a horrible Christmas jumper, but I don't think that counts as a tech gift. That's just something that needs to be
done. It has to at least have a plug on it.
Yes.
I think.
You missed the chance to say Gran Turismo 6. You could have talked about that.
Well, I sensed that no one else wants to talk about Gran Turismo 6. I have bought it for myself. It'll turn up on the 6th and... then I'll disappear into my own little world. But nobody else seems to be interested. It's all old hat with all you new console types. And it's never been the most social game anyway, has it? You bought Forza and Project Gotham Racing before that as the games where you actually got stuck in and, you know, swore at each other online. Gran Turismo was always the autist's choice.
Gran Turismo is like the real ale drinker of the car sim world.
Yeah, for people with massive virtues.
Camera approved. Okay, Hodge, what about you?
I'm terrible with presents, buying and being bought for, but something that's coming into our house, if you've got any little kids, children, is the Orbeez Foot Spa, which is, you might need to look that up. It's basically you stick your feet in and it gives you a foot massage. It's got gel-filled balls. Which is always
Ooh,
a bonus, yeah. Which are cascaded around your feet and ankles to give you a relaxing ambient light show going on at the same time. And we'll have two of those in the house on Christmas Day. So I'd imagine I'll have my feet stuck in sometime by Boxing Day when the kids are totally
your
bored.
Your feet
of it.
Stuck in amongst some balls.
Yeah, some gel-filled balls.
Gel-filled balls. Yes.
All squeezy and squashy and tactile.
as a new dad, I have actually bought my son a sort of onesie thing that, you know, bobsy babies wear, which simply says on the front, "Daddy drinks because I cry," which I just couldn't ask.
That is good.
So yes.
Well, I'm going to recommend, because I've just bought one myself, and it's got a plug, so I think it classes as a tech, but Nespresso machine, absolutely brilliant. I've been enjoying lattes and cappuccinos and espressos, flat whites, Americanos, to my heart's content. I'm absolutely caffeined up at the moment and wired to the gills, but it's been great fun. I'm really glad I got it.
You are just gibbering now, aren't you? Is it actually fun, or is it just a nice drink?
You know, it is a really nice... First of all, it's really nice coffee, but also... But it's actually quite good fun making them too.
What's fun? Are you giggling away, aren't you there?
I don't know. Nothing's ever going to touch the slush coffee machine, is it really, for joy? Mm. Or a proper soda stream.
Soda stream. Yeah, that always tastes disgusting.
Awful.
I don't know.
Apart from the Tizer, which actually tasted like Tizer, which is awful in the first place, which was just easy enough to mimic.
Am I the only person that, along with his brother one day as a kid, got bored and thought, what happens if you put milk in it? Just as anyone out there who does have a soda stream, don't put milk in it.
I'm fairly sure I did do that.
Just don't.
It's messy.
And it never clears
messy
the
and it starts
directly.
To smell really and quickly.
Yeah, it just really starts bad. To smell like a little cheese factory.
I also found in the cupboard, I actually got this, when I lived in Hong Kong, I was...
nice.
It was so much competition for credit cards that if you apply for a credit card, you gave you a free gift. So I applied for about 6 of them just to get all these free gifts. And one of these gifts was one of those orange squeezers, you know, where you squeeze it down on top of the thing and it moves. It's got a motor in it and it basically, you know, it squeezes the orange for you effectively. Because I'm now drinking freshies. A juicer, thank you. That was the word I was reaching for but couldn't remember. But I knew that Mark the Chef would help me out at some point.
I'm your juicer.
Having fresh orange juice in the morning and my latte and a croissant. So it's all good news at my house.
Could you sound any more smug?
I won't repeat what Phil's just posted on
there. No, but the initials are VPC, 3 words.
See you next Tuesday.
Crossword solvers.
It must have been,
4, 4, and 4.
The credit card reminded me of a story from a while ago. A guy I used to work with, he got one of the very, very first Egg credit cards. And because Egg is a French company, they had effectively ported the French application form across. So instead of just being able to select Mr., Mrs., Doctor, etc., you could put in something that you like. So he just put in Lord. and just submitted it like that, and it came back with, you know, Lord, then his surname, and it's an amazingly useful thing to have at restaurants. You wind up with a tremendously obsequious level of service, and obviously they got wise to it because regrettably you can no longer do it. But it always used to amuse me when he used to whip that out, figuratively speaking.
I'd be Lord Darth Vader. That'd be fantastic.
Lord Vader.
I believe that you do.
Your canapes are ready.
You do at least need some form of real name in there as well, Steve. So you'd need to be deed polling to do that.
Are you saying that Darth Vader is not a real name?
I'm sure that somebody out there is called that, but yes. You know, whether they have an egg credit
Steve,
card.
Steve Vader, his brother. Jeff Vader. Isn't that Eddie Izzard sketch? When he's in the canteen on the Death Star.
Oh, yeah.
And they keep telling me he has to have a tray. I don't need a tray. I'm Darth Vader. I can kill you with my mind. Yeah, but the food's hot. Food's hot. Okay, yeah, well, okay. I'll have a tray then. Thank you. Anyway, so I'm digressing a bit now. Right, so I guess that's it for another week. Hope you've all been suitably entertained.
Us all then.
Sorry?
Us all then.
Either at this point.
Either will do.
I'm not a fussy man. If you're happy, then that's a good start. If the listeners are happy, that'd be great. Right, so that's it for this week. As we leave, Mark Botwright.
You didn't even say thanks.
Oh.
No, you just said my name.
Thank you.
Gee, how much of that Nespresso have you had?
Do that again.
Steve actually hasn't slept in 6 days. He's just sat there scratching the invisible insects off his skin.
To be honest, I didn't know what the thing about Amazon, what you were talking about there. I was Googling for Simon Monday there.
Sorry?
Cyber Monday.
Cyber Monday.
And I was thinking, Simon Monday. I wonder what this is.
What did you find? That Friday, you know, it was just a big shopping day. Oh, yeah, he's doing it online. That's all.
Nice gentleman called Simon Monday.
All right, well, on that note, that's it for this week. Thank you to Mark Botwright.
Wayne Pooney takes shat.
Mark Hodgkinson.
They say summer is the best time for a summer holiday.
Simon Crust.
This girl's so wet for me, I can hear the waves breaking in her steam.
And Ed Sully.
Actually, can one of you help me? I think she may be a two-man job.
Follow us on, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmark avforums.com for the latest reviews, news and videos. Plus, why not leave us a rating on iTunes if, dear God, please, you enjoyed the show. I'm Steve Withers. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday.